Hi, it's Ricey Ryder with The Reporter. Today, I answer questions surrounding content creation. Is factual media different from journalism? How do I get started in this field, and who else is doing the same thing? You'll be surprised to learn that there are tens of thousands, if not more, in the exact same boat. Navigating the internet is a skill. Just as when you cross a river, it's important to have good guidance. If you like the show today, then I recommend checking out my link tree in the show notes below. I'm most prevalent on Instagram and on YouTube. And as always, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. Let's get into this. Hi, I'm Ricey Ryder, and welcome to The Reporter. Coming up, I want to answer the question plaguing modern communication specialists and modern journalists. What is modern day 21st century journalism? What makes journalism as a profession different from people who make video essays? Or, for that matter, what makes journalists different from any independent creator? Let's explore what journalism and content creation means in the 21st century. Journalism changes every second the internet runs. So, let's get back to the core of journalism and rediscover what it means to be a reporter. I'll preface first by saying that I, Ricey Ryder, Vincent Austin, I am not a journalist. At least, not yet. We'll get into the differences later, but you're listening to a journalism student who writes for pleasure, who is learning how to script, and who has been thrown into the fire of video production. The field of media communications, not necessarily journalism, is my biggest passion. That being said, the core definition of what journalism is, it's hard and fast. Journalism is the art, because it is an art, I would say, of collecting information, deciphering the most important facts, the most important elements, the who, what, where, why, when, and how, and it's creating a newsworthy story based off of those facts, something that your audience would actually enjoy to hear. But that being said, newsworthy doesn't mean that it's something that our audience wants to know, necessarily. Stories can definitely be what we want our audience to know, but a lot of the times it's also what our audience needs to know. And that goes for a lot of hard journalism. Political developments, homicides, car crashes, road closures. A lot of hard news does relate back to everyday life. And even if it's not something you want to know, there's a lot of stuff that you need to know, or that you may need to know, to better navigate your everyday life. With all being said, the profession of a journalist has been one of overlooked importance, even though it's our job to connect with our audience about important events that deeply matter. And as a journalist, you realize you play a role of fundamental importance that is intended to preserve a free and fair democracy. With no good journalism, citizens could not possibly have a decent education. We would essentially live in the dark ages if we didn't know the developments of not only the world around us, but it goes down to the country level, it goes down to the regional level, it goes down to the county level, all the way down to your own neighborhood. Which is why I'm not going to talk about apps like Nextdoor, but places like those are a good way for citizens to become journalists themselves. Something called citizen journalism. You see it, you spot it, you call it out. Anyways, if we're talking certified journalists or those who are employed by either a news organization, something like that, who have graduated from university, because there used to be, and there still is, kind of a paper ceiling when it comes to journalism. But all journalists are held by two fundamentals. Accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. Nothing will ever beat accuracy as a reporter. Because if you lose your accuracy, you lose everything. You're not a journalist anymore. And that's something that's super hard to get back. If you want to know more about that, I might put something in the show notes. The second fundamental is attempting to cover all facets and all sides of a story. If a reporter isn't accurate, who even are they? They're just flapping gums and blowing smoke. And if they don't cover all sides of the story, then you can't really call them a fair journalist, because they're directly partisan. And you know, news bias and partisanship is a whole different story, but fundamentally, as a reporter, it is your duty to report two popular sides of an argument, or, you know, more than two popular sides of an argument, because it's important to represent everyone in the field. To learn more about, you know, the ethics and what makes a journalist, I strongly recommend reading up on the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics. The best journalists and storytellers, reporters of today, strictly adhere to these principles. And these principles are applied everywhere, from war, natural disaster, medical sciences, the state of technology, sports, politics, anything you could think of. While good journalists do follow the Professional Journalists Code of Ethics, there's so many more independents and those who are not necessarily affiliated with any organization who can boot up a camera, boot up their microphone, and say whatever they want. The profession of being in front of a camera today has been producing an absurd amount of jobs and career hoods because of the digital ecosystem that we live in, which is constantly evolving. The sore thumb of journalism today are news influencers, what we would call, or news entertainers. News influencers are traditionally, I say traditionally, but this is, again, is a field that changes and molds every day with public perception. But traditionally, news influencers are more right-leaning. But like, as an example, I still see shocking headlines from Instagram influencers about what's happening in the White House, or, you know, this and that is happening, and you see people throw up a sensationalist headline where that may or may not be true, and it gives the listener a reason to watch on, and it generates clicks. I will say, there's a place for entertainers, but it's not the greatest place to get real, curated news. An independent entertainer has no obligation to their audience. In essence, they can say whatever they want. Facts are only the gravy on top. When I talked with Devin, and we were talking about the Fortress of Faith, and he was talking about Tom Wallace, the host of the Fortress of Faith, he would talk about how Tom would not try to verify any facts, or tell readers or listeners to verify any facts, until it came to a certain issue where he could cherry pick a fact. So he would go, look it up, it's true, and then, which would mislead consumers into believing a false narrative, all because he claimed one set of facts, when most of his reporting is the Great Replacement Theory sort of racist rhetoric that's going on. So when you look at Tom Wallace or full-blown conspiracy theorists, they're heavy on the notion of unfalsifiable claims. And an unfalsifiable claim is something I think is super important to understand what it is today, because it's something that an unfalsifiable claim is a claim that cannot be substantiated with evidence, but also cannot be disproven. And I'll get into that a little bit in a second. News influencers in the digital space, influencers cycle through the digital space so frequently because they have the independence or the freedom to put out the most insane headlines to cap off a video or an article and pass it off as news. Tucker Carlson is a great example of someone who either embellishes or makes crazy claims, unfalsifiable claims out of left field. I want to say for the purpose of generating clicks. He said, as a shortlist, he said the metric system was a complete conspiracy theory. He said that wind power is a scam, and he said that politicians are having more orgies than ever. Okay, let's break that down for a second. Politicians are having more orgies than ever. That's an unfalsifiable claim, because he has no evidence of that, and knowing the amount of orgies that modern day politicians have, that's not something that the public can possibly know unless you send someone on a complete watchdog investigation. I just think, you know, proving a claim like this that's totally unsubstantiated with no evidence behind it, it's all just rhetoric from Tucker's part. It makes for a really good headline, but it doesn't make for good journalism. But You know, who wouldn't be interested in such a sensationalized idea? So I don't blame the millions or hundreds of thousands, I'm not sure how many, people tune into Tucker Carlson because he says a lot of interesting stuff, even if it's not true. He has curated a sort of cult of entertainment around his personality in a similar sense to Donald Trump, but that's going towards politics. And I want to talk more about how a modern journalist or how a student, a modern creator such as yourself, how you campaign towards employment. Okay, you decided news influencing isn't your type of gig because it comes off, it is as, okay. You've decided that news influencing isn't your type of business because it comes off as disingenuous. You want to be a real storyteller who makes a wage talking about what's real. Okay, what comes first? Obviously, in journalism, such as any field, the name of the game is connections, connections, connections. Just like any other career path, it's about who you know. And as a journalist, as a media creator, I would say that these connections most often come from universities or schools, if you have good resources there, comes from friends or friends of friends. Like, I have a friend who's been making gaming YouTube content for, I want to say 10 plus years now. And his channel has always been something in the back of my mind because storytelling has always been something I want to do. So connecting with him has been a good chance to discover what it means to be involved in the story making process, in the filming process, and as well as my friend of a friend, my friend William, has a connection to this guy, Ben Arthur, who I have interviewed and whose episode will be coming out in December. Look forward to it. He's a reporter for NFL on Fox. And I wouldn't have known that my friend knew an NFL on Fox reporter if I never asked around, if I never asked my friends, hey, do you know someone in this field? Hey, is there someone you could possibly connect me with? And I guess this kind of takes me into cold calling, because cold calling is especially useful in your career to generate these sorts of connections. When you cold call or cold email or text someone out of the blue, first of all, if you have projects out, it gives the recipient a chance to admire your body of work, and cold calling gives you a chance to advertise your best self to a real professional in the field. Oftentimes, it's not about what you do, it's about why you do it. So if there's people who see what you do, even if it's not very good, if they see the why behind it, if they see the passion behind it, they see how serious you are about it, then there's a good chance that that person or those people or that group will want to attach themselves to your project. And you can start super small. You can start with a coach, or like I said, a teacher or a professor, some buddies that you know that are also doing media creation. One thing I've found about Generation Z, it's you're hard pressed to not know someone that's at least interested in making content, if not for a hobby, for a living. They're truly everywhere, especially where I am, Western Washington, very much on the cutting edge of technology. That's something a lot of kids take advantage of, or a lot of students like to take advantage of, being on the pulse of what's trending in the media, how to not exploit, but how to take advantage of the media and discovering what it is they want to do and if they want it to be involved with media at all. But creating projects, whether it be an article or a podcast or a blog, YouTube videos, using those things to build up your body of work is everything. Just like investing, if you start early, the dividends will be greater later, probably. Because the earlier you start, the better you get early. I'm not the same podcaster I was a month or two ago. You go a long way if you really start a project and you decide to commit yourself to it. And I also want to say that, like, if you're the type of person that's super nervous to start, I totally get it. I'm in that exact same boat where it's like I felt paralyzed by the future of my career, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what the future would really entail if I didn't have a decent skill set. So I started The Reporter, and I threw myself into the fire, metaphorically speaking, but I didn't do it right away. As I'll talk about a little later, marketing is everything, so it's okay to start and not have a project out yet. For example, I just started a social media and told my friends about it, got them to follow me, and I made a plan for myself. I'll do one interview podcast a month. That's it. So I have a lot of time to, first of all, generate content, produce and edit that content, curate it into a decent format, and spit it out to the world. Progress doesn't happen overnight, and oftentimes it takes a lot of time to function properly, metaphorically speaking, in a space like this. If you don't really know where to start on your project, then the very first place I'd look is on YouTube. There's hundreds and hundreds, or thousands, so many just free guides of whatever you want. There's so many guides, and there is countless free guides to learn whatever you want. I looked up videos for podcasting, website creation, video editing. So much stuff is just readily available online to learn whatever tools you have. For building connections, LinkedIn is a huge one. With LinkedIn, it's like a Rolodex, actually, a modern day Rolodex of professional contacts who you can hit up or hear from or learn about what they're doing, and keep people within your circle of media creation, if that makes sense. Personally, for article publishing, I've used Medium, which works to varying degrees. There's also Wattpad, and you could also create your own website for your own blog, but Medium is my weapon of choice. And then publish videos on YouTube, because like it or not, people love free video. So people will always be flocking to YouTube. There's always going to be a pull on YouTube for podcasts, for documentaries, for the educational content I was talking about. Even for journalists, Channel 5 with Andrew Callahan is an amazing example of an independent journalist who made a career out of essentially nothing. He started with an idea of traveling to these really weird subcultures or communities and interviewing them. He interviewed them with honesty and compassion to get a holistic picture of what these people believed and what goes on within their community. And then another independent journalist who does a similar thing, Peter Santinella. Peter does a similar shtick where he goes to quite literally the most impoverished communities in America. His most popular videos are him interviewing residents within deep Appalachia territory. He'd be in West Virginia interviewing people in a town of like 1,500, in a town of 1,000, where it's broken down buildings everywhere, and it's a complete ghost town from the mines that used to populate the area. There's also mainstream news has largely migrated to YouTube as well, because these big platforms know, the billionaires who run these platforms know, that YouTube is incredibly powerful. Like I said, it's generated many careers based off of nothing but personality and an idea. If you want to know about the legwork for an independent journalist or even an independent media creator, it involves so much repetition, a lot of planning, writing, rewriting, and like I've been saying, connecting with people. In 2025, skills in photography and video production are so paramount to building a nice looking portfolio. The saying goes, and it's been going, that print is dead. So typing skills just aren't going to be valued as much as video skills. Then that also begs the question of, how comfortable are you setting up a space to record content? What kind of content are you going to produce? Do you have the means to produce good content? These are all things that are going to matter deeply and will not influence only your following, but your passion behind the project, which goes for media creation in general. It's not your what, it's your why. If people see your vision and your work adds value to their lives, then you will have a dedicated group of fans who want to see you succeed as much as you do. Which is something I've seen on The Reporter, and big kudos to all my listeners out there, because this is really the dream, and this is what it's all about. Something that comes with setting up a space to record content and having the means to produce good content, general trend is that the better the content is, the more views it'll get. So obviously, please start with what you have. Start with your iPhone. Start with a little Amazon microphone. Start with a cheap camera. If you have resources, take full advantage of them. Because your passion is super important. The why is super important. What you do is super important. But people generally don't want to listen if the quality isn't very good, which is just the unfortunate truth of a media landscape populated by a bunch of rich professionals, which leads into marketing. How are you going to outcompete these super big news outlets or these places which have corporate or public funding? What platforms are you going to be on? How are you going to reach your audience? Who even is your audience? Are you charismatic in front of a camera? Do you know people who will support your work? And is there anybody in the industry who can evaluate your work? Is there anyone in the industry who you can partner with or interview or work alongside? How does content fit into your brand? And brand is something incredibly important, something I talked with my second interview, Moy Moy, about. Moy Moy Gregorio, film director, student at Western Washington University. Digital footprint is everything, because every employer you try to work for, regardless of the profession, they're going to be looking for a social media presence. And it's gotten to the point where you're weird if you don't have a social media presence. So it's kind of something that's been forced upon our generation, but something I also think we can adapt to. So all of these, especially audience, are all questions that should be playing out in your mind almost daily. Part of starting is realizing the kind of work it really takes to lift a project, a passion, or a persona off of the ground and turning it into something real. Saying that my professor, Andrew Wall, loved to point at is that getting your first job in the journalism or media space is the hardest part. It's difficult to get noticed by companies when there's so many applicants striving for the exact same thing. However, if your portfolio is solid, you have good people vouching for you, and you know your skill set, and you know exactly what you're capable of, it serves as a big leg up. When you get that first job as a journalist or a media creator, it's a big step up from freelancing. For one, you have the grace of working within a company that distributes media, so they're probably going to connect you to resources right away, and they're going to let you know what's up. What's tough is working on deadlines, because media companies often have pretty strict deadlines for news. For traditional news specifically, working on a 24-hour cycle, everything has to be current all the time. And your finger has to be on the pulse, not just on your work days, but on your off days. And something that the future of media is yet to see is the separation of work-life balance, which is something I've heard Gen Z has been trying to move towards, is separating work from life. So I'm excited and curious to see how something like that plays out in the next 10 to 20 years. But it doesn't have to be traditional journalism, because all companies, not just news outlets, need digital representation in the digital age. Companies have been recognizing the need for multimedia content, so audio, video, writing, audio, video, writing are kind of like the core three in my opinion. So these companies recruit journalists and communication specialists alike, media creators. Many potential journalists actually end up going down the public relations route. Every company needs a digital footprint, so it naturally makes sense for the PR industry to be one that's been growing. While traditional journalism shrinks, PR is growing. Media representation jobs are growing. Every company needs a digital footprint, just as every employee needs a digital footprint, so it naturally makes sense for PR to boom. Individuals in PR help manage a brand's image. They produce media highlighting the efforts of a company, jumping on internet trends, or doing their damnedest to quell ensuing backlash, which is probably the hardest part of being a PR person. If your company does something totally screwy, but you as an employee who is tasked with keeping up the image of the company, you being forced to spin such a negative story into a positive light. Unfortunately, PR execs work in the pocket of big business, or any business, their business, not in the public interest. So what even defines journalism on the internet today? Nowadays, there's no set categories for journalism. Is a podcaster a journalist? Maybe not. But maybe they still discuss contemporary world problems in a meaningful light. I have a list of guys. Joe Scott is a podcaster who makes content. He interviews professionals in the field of science, and he devotes his time answering his most burning questions about science, whether it be biology, anthropology, astrophysics, anything. Then there's Hank Green, who is hard to define, but I would just consider professional smart guy, making content about contemporary world problems or what's going on right now that tick him off or that make him think a sort of way. And then category of thinkers or podcasters, Joe Rogan should absolutely not be doubted as one, because he brings on experts to the show, asks them his most burning questions, and you as a listener get to learn alongside with him. Then there's the sports field, which has always been a mix of entertainment with hard journalism, but Tom Grossi is probably the most popular example, and a rabid NFL fan turned creator. And that's a good example of entertainer turned NFL insider, because now Grossi has all these connections to the NFL, to general managers, to executives. So maybe this random internet person is not putting their boots on the ground, but they glean the most important stories of modern life, and they're talking about it. And isn't that similar to journalism? Isn't journalism just presenting a set of facts from primary sources and spinning it into a true story? Is journalism gonna die as a field, only to be replaced by media? Only time will tell. Putting labels on creators is a hard thing to grapple with. It's something the communication field is still unsure of today. But if you want to make really good, factual content, nothing is stopping you. Already, thousands have broken into the field based on nothing but a vision, a camera, and a microphone. Throw in some research and you got a damn good product. I'll leave you with a quote by Bill Moyers about journalism that really strikes me. The quality of democracy and the quality of journalism are deeply intertwined, by Bill Moyers. Thank you for watching.
If you enjoyed the show, then I highly recommend the show notes. They have all the relevant links as well as a detailed description of what you listened to today. It also has a link to all of my social medias through my link tree. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.